Hi, welcome to Conversations on Public Health. I'm your host, Prachi. Join me every week as I travel across India, speaking to folks who are solving massive public health challenges facing our country and the larger developing world. Welcome to Conversations on Public Health. This is part 4 in a 4-part series on millennials and mental health. Anxiety is a constant companion for most millennials, and today we delve deeper into it. Our episode is in association with The Mood Space, which is an online counseling platform catering to the unique mental health needs of South Asians across the globe. Joining us today is Trisha Daruwala. Trisha is a therapist at The Mood Space and has significant experience in handling various anxiety-related disorders. Hi, Trisha. Very welcome to our show.
Hi, Prachi. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Right. Our topic today is one that's very close to my heart. We discuss anxiety today. And it's something that I suffer from and practically everyone I know also has it. What really is anxiety? And before you tell us what anxiety is, can you also tell us how is it different from stress and panic? Because I think these three words get thrown around a lot and are used interchangeably.
Absolutely. I think it's a very important question and requires a clarification, though it does get a little tricky while defining it. But let's try to do that through an example. There is a tiger in front of you, right? There's a real tiger in front of you. Whatever the body is reacting to that, let's say it could be a rush in your adrenaline that, you know, run away, just run away right now. Or, you know, you go into that mode of freeze that, okay, I can't do anything now, I'm just standing here. Or it could be like you start finding tools to fight the tiger. So whatever you respond to a real tiger is your stress. Till the tiger is there, your body will be going through that particular response. But as soon as the tiger goes away or you survive it, your body will survive, plus it will come back to its normal state, right? So that way, like a tiger in our times could be a work deadline, it could be anything else. But now let's come to anxiety. Now in anxiety, it's more like we anticipate that the tiger will come in front of us. We keep anticipating, what if it comes in front of us? What will I do if it comes in front of us? So there are a lot of what if questions, which we call as overthinking, that starts in our mind that triggers responses in our body and emotions. So these responses is called anxiety. So some of the physical response could be a constant, a persistent feeling of, you know, okay, something is going to go wrong. Ghabraat ho rahi hai. I am feeling this sense of my heart pounding again and again. It does subside, but again, it may start in a particular day. Now let's come to panic. Panic is that there is a possibility that we are either anticipating the tiger or the tiger is actually there. But in that moment, our body goes, it reacts so intensely in that moment that there could be symptoms like sweating, trembling, feelings of choking, a lot of discomfort and chest pain. And these responses, this surge of intense fear, it just reaches a peak within around 10 minutes, right? So when we react in such an intense manner, it becomes panic, right? So if you look at this example, overall in summary, we can differentiate these three, though there's a thin line between the three, but we can differentiate it in terms of the severity and in terms of, you know, the why is it happening, right? Lastly, just to add here, anxiety is a response. It's not, it's a response to an anticipation. So that's how I think I will define anxiety.
Okay. Can we say that anxiety and panic are basically on the same spectrum, but on two different poles?
Yes, we can say that when a body reacts intensely to some anticipation, it becomes a panic attack. That, you know, we are going through a panic attack.
And otherwise, it's just this persistent feeling.
Yes,
that persistent sort of
worry
stays with you.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's what you'd call anxiety.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, you mentioned fight, flight, or freeze. Is that always and only a stress response?
Right, so the fight, flight, and freeze, it's a stress response. It's a body's normal reaction to survival. But what happens is that when we are going through these responses on a very daily basis, daily levels, like, you know, there's a consistent presence of a stressor. Again, it could be either that there's a real tiger or could be an anticipation. These are the three that mainly come up from our body, but because they get used up very a lot by the body, it leaves us with a lot of cortisol levels in our body, which is very unhealthy. It leads to some kind of you know, physical disease, or even makes us vulnerable to mental illnesses, because of which you know, anxiety, depression, and others become extremely you know, common, because the stress levels really become high.
To sum up, stress is always caused by an external factor.
Yes.
And will stay as long as that external factor is in your environment.
Right. But the changes it leaves in your body, it makes you vulnerable to disorders or intense emotions like anxiety and depression.
So that's the relationship between stress, anxiety, and panic, then, that consistent stress could leave you more vulnerable to anxiety and panic.
Absolutely.
The next question I'd want to come to is, how do I know that I am then feeling anxious? Like, how do I know it's not stress and it's not panic?
You know, your question is valid, because naming what we are going through becomes very important in the process, because once we name that, the feeling becomes extremely conscious. But before we understand that, okay, what are we going through, it's really important to know why and how are these responses taking place, right? So you know, here is where the brain gets involved with our emotional responses. We generally, you know, see depression, anxiety as a phase, and people say that ye to hota rehta hai, right? But people won't say the same thing for diabetes, where, you know, we try to understand the cause of diabetes. We try to go into the understanding, okay, how can I do it better? How can I treat this better, right? The similar way, brain is also involved in anxiety and depression. So let's first try to understand that, right? Okay, a very simple analogy to explain the brain. You know, just imagine your hand, okay? Now, in your hand, there's a wrist, okay? Imagine that wrist as called the brain stem. What a brain stem is that it regulates your basic functions, breathing, other parts of how we respond to the environment, right? Moving to the thumb becomes the emotional brain, or what we call as the amygdala. So that thumb is basically, it helps us process our emotional memories, helps us process emotions, right? So it's called the emotional center, or the actually sometimes it's also called the threat center of the brain. And our fingers, they signify the cognitive brain, which is basically it helps in understanding the planning, the execution, and all that. So if we look at this as our brain, it becomes easier to understand how it works. So all these parts, the wrist, the thumb, and our fingers, they're communicating with each other, right? And when they communicate properly, we feel in control. But now let's say that we are anxious now. We are not regulated physically and emotionally. We are not feeling regulated. What exactly is happening is that the parts are not communicating properly. The parts of my brains are not communicating properly. And due to, let's say, past experiences or what we have learned, any dangerous kind of a situation will leave a warning sign. It will be like a red alert, right? And that red alert is in our emotional brain, the thumb. Now, if that gets activated, what happens is that because the warning sign is very severe, it flips the lid. The lid is our fingers. So we lose touch with the part of the brain that is involved in thinking, that's involved in rational thinking, in perspective, in empathy, right? So what happens is we get hijacked by the wrist and the thumb. When that happens, we are left with a lot of physical symptoms because the wrist is responsible for our breathing, for our posture and everything, while our emotional brain is constantly sending that warning sign and we don't know what exactly to do. In these cases, when the lid goes off, we feel extremely overwhelmed.
So basically, like, our cognitive abilities just go for a toss.
Exactly. And that's why we feel that we are not able to handle. And that's why I said that feeling of control goes away.
Okay, understood. And this feeling of, like, helplessness or being out of control is basic. Or out of control thinking also is basically what happens when you have an anxiety attack.
Absolutely. So overthinking, a feeling of helplessness, a feeling of anxiety persist because our emotional brain is constantly active. And it's like, you know, it's like a radar. Anything that goes wrong, warning sign keeps taking place. So if our thumb becomes so vulnerable and it keeps sending warning signs like these, we feel that, you know, I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to sit at one place. You know, symptoms like, okay, I want to withdraw myself. I don't want to talk to anybody. Because if I do and the warning sign goes off, it's going to leave me with a lot of pain, physical pain in terms of heart, chest pain, or, you know, breathlessness, which we don't want to go through.
I feel like I will worry because worrying makes me feel like I'm in control of the situation, even though I'm completely not in. But I feel like I'm doing something about it. Like, I'm worrying about it.
Absolutely. You're so right. And, you know, even though, let's say, there's a deadline, right? Like, people will say, why don't you just start working on it, right? But as you said, that worry just makes us get that balance between the emotional brain and the wrist, which is the limbic system, right? Why? Because it makes us feel as if there is some control and we don't even need to do anything about it.
You know, when you worry, you feel like you've thought of the worst case scenario. If I worry about it, I somehow feel like I am protecting myself from
exactly.
The worst case scenario.
I think you're absolutely right. And the word protection is very important here, that worry acts like we are protecting ourselves from the worst. That, you know, even if that comes true, I have at least worried about it. You know, I know that it's going to happen, so I might as well.
It's familiar,
exactly, right? And that also, you know, it is protecting us, but in the moment, you know, if you look at it that way, that protection is very in the moment protection. And what we do is that because we are constantly thinking about the worst, we actually push ourselves also to the worst. We try to push ourselves to the familiar. That, okay, because that's the worst, let me try to push myself there. And it becomes like a self-fulfilling thing, right? But when we reach that part of worst case and when it starts becoming real, it is going to evoke sensations like panic or intense fear, right? And that's very difficult to handle. So if I say it's like a cycle, you know, that once that lid goes off, we are still in that zone of between the thumb and the wrist, which is our emotional brain and our limbic system, and worry, avoidance, and other, they just act like a protection. But this protection actually pushes us to actually go to the worst. And when that worst starts becoming real, it's very difficult to handle.
And you also feel like, you know, and when the worst actually happens, you feel like, oh, at least I've worried about it.
Yes.
So, you feel like it was good that I worried about it.
Exactly. So, that's why our cycle keeps getting reinforced. That, you know, chalo, at least I worried about it. So, I'm familiar. And coming out of that comfort zone is also very difficult.
Because I feel like we always end up prioritizing a familiar evil to anything unfamiliar.
Yeah,
right?
and
And
again,
that's what worrying does. It familiarizes you to the worst of the worst.
exactly. That's why anticipation is something that, you know, is human strength, but it has its challenges as well. That's why we plan. That's why we do everything to keep ourselves in control. But when we keep looking at the future, we don't realize that our present is getting compromised somewhere.
How do I know when I'm going through an anxiety attack? And more importantly, like, what do I do about it?
Right. So, firstly, as I said, that when the lid goes off, right, you're going through an anxiety attack because you're feeling it in your body, right? And we do everything as humans to not feel that. And we try to avoid this feeling again and again. And the worry also increases, as we just discussed. So whenever there is increased worry or overthinking, or whenever there are symptoms which are mild, there is shortness of breath, but that's coming from time to time, but we feel it's okay, you know, it's manageable, and we don't try to do anything about that in the moment, we are building that anxiety up, right? So that's when you're going through an anxiety attack, where there are symptoms like your heartbeat is racing from moment to moment, there's breathlessness from moment to moment, right? And if we keep letting this happen, we are pushing ourselves to that panic attack where there is an intense increase in fear.
It seems like anxiety is something that is characterized by excessive movement, whether of your heart or, you know, in your brain. You're overthinking, you're pacing a lot, you're sweating, or maybe like shaking your hands. But can it also show up as lethargy?
Right. So to answer that question, I think let's imagine like a ladder in front of us, right? Where let's say that we have been dealing with a difficult situation, or could be even an anticipation. Let's say an example could be exams, right? Now we know that the exam is going to come, and we have given exams in the past, but still it could be like a trigger for many of us. Right, so in the start, it may start as I can't do these exams. Statements like I can't do this exam, I just can't take this, right? Which can act like a shutdown, where it might show up as lethargy, it might show up as fatigue, it might show up as procrastination as well, right? That's when our body then moves up the ladder, and up the ladder there is agitation, there is a lot of you know, as you said, movement. We start feeling anxious, we start anticipating so much, and we start worrying, right? And once we resolve both of these part of the ladders, we move up where we are more safe with the environment. So what I'm trying to say here is that lethargy may show up in the start and could be seen as leading to anxiety, that, you know, maybe now our body will come out from this shutdown zone and go into that flight mode. So we are not you might see that before you start the movement, or before you start, there is a sense of not getting up, there is that sense of your posture will become very slouchy, right? And then as you're moving up, the anxiety increases. But some of us may just get stuck on the ladder as well.
What do I do if I find myself anxious or stuck on the ladder?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So let's look at this again as a ladder, as you said. When you're feeling the numbness, when you're feeling that you're going into that shutdown mode where your body is refusing to move and you want to just sit at one place, withdraw yourself from people, right? In those moments, firstly, we have to understand that what's important is safety. The fact that we have emotions like fear, sadness, regret, it drives us to move towards safety so that we are safe in the environment. But when these emotions become extremely intense, That is, it becomes anxiety, depression, or guilt. It is interfering with our process of becoming safe, right? So emotions work on a spectrum. So when we start moving towards the unhealthy side of the emotion, our safety is also getting compromised, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing that our body needs is to realize that, okay, I am safe. The tiger is there, is not there now. You know, the tiger is no more and it has gone. So the first thing is that the reason that the numbing and everything is happening is firstly because the emotional brain has activated and even our body is going into that freeze zone or is going into that flight zone, right? So the first step is to calm the nervous system down, right? What I mean by calming the nervous system down is if you're numbing or you're going into the shutdown mode, just instructing yourself to do small things like, okay, I'm just getting up from the bed right now. Okay, I'll be just taking 10 steps as of now. So what we are doing here is that we are increasing the movement, but at the same time keeping it very specific of how much do I want to move. Also, okay, coming back to the body and saying,
so this is more like an emergency response, like this is what you should do immediately.
Yeah, immediately. Our response would be to avoid it or to, you know, go to sleep or to not think about it. But what happens is that it's just building up. So the best way to do that is to get our safety back. And our safety lies in thinking that we are in an environment right now and I am safe here.
So you're saying avoidance is not a good strategy then, for anxiety?
Absolutely. It protects you. It has a good side to it, but it is a very temporary protection that it's providing you. Absolutely. So let's say that if you are alone at home, right, and you are feeling anxious as of now, firstly, engaging your cognitive brain is the first activity, because as we said that the lid goes up, so we are not in sync with our fingers now. So to get in sync with our fingers, we need to engage our brain, right? So to do that, we need to engage our senses. Like, okay, what is the 5 things that I can see in my room that are red in color? Okay. Can I just count the number of things in my room that are black in color? What are some few smells that I can feel in my room right now?
Okay.
What are the 3 things that I can feel on my body? Could be the chair, could be the backrest, could be my hand on the table. So what we are doing here is that we are engaging the senses and getting our cognitive brain back. People might say that it's a distraction, but actually not. It's not a distraction. It's that you're redirecting your attention to the present than the anticipation. Distraction will look more like sleeping, not talking about that emotion, not getting yourself back to the moment. But once you bring back your senses to the reality, then comes the breathing. Breathing becomes very important because we have to reconnect all the parts of the brain, right? So the breathing has to be inhaling and exhaling very slowly through your mouth. So when you are exhaling more, there's more activity happening in the brain, right? So inhaling and exhaling through your mouth, very slowly, but, right? And this could be done 3 to 4 times. Then it could also mean movement, right? When I say movement, not in terms of, you know, pacing around the room where you're not even mindful that, okay, I'm pacing around the room. If you're pacing around the room, counting the number of steps you are taking. Counting the number of steps you are taking backward, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, I walked 10 steps, now 9, now 8, now 7, right? So again, you are engaging the cognitive brain here. You should observe yourself of what am I doing when I'm anxious? As if, you know, you're watching yourself that, okay, what am I doing when I'm anxious? You can ask your close ones that, you know, have you ever seen what I do when I'm anxious? You know, maybe you're shaking your leg a lot. Maybe you start blabbering. Maybe you start avoiding people in the start, right? So we all have our patterns of how we deal with our anxiety as well, correct? Mm-hmm. But once we know the baseline, that's when we can change what to change in that particular baseline.
But, you know, also when I'm anxious, it's the last thing I'll think of. I'll just keep doing the pattern, like repeating the patterns I'm repeating. So are there any hacks that can remind me that I have to do this when I'm anxious?
So one of the best ways is to trust a person that is in the environment, right? Having somebody trust, but you know, many of us may not have that in the environment. So the best way is to practice these things when you're not anxious. The fact that your, you know, patterns have developed is due to practice.
Yes.
Correct? The same has to be applied to the new things that we are trying to learn, where we are training our brain to behave in a particular way when we are getting anxious, right? So if you breathe when you are not anxious, you are practicing it, you are reinforcing it, seeing how it feels. Okay, how do I feel once I breathe? Is it making me feel a little calmer than before?
Right.
And once you do that, you will be able to apply it when you are anxious as well, right? So whatever activity you relate to, you know, many people also do journaling even when they are not anxious.
And then the idea being that if you do these things, eventually you'd stop avoiding people, you'd stop being lethargic, and you would be able to sort of move on.
Right. So I think this is a very interesting question, and how would I answer this is that, okay, let's look at these strategies as a band-aid, but it is also important that once that bandage has worked, to open the wound and see why did the wound happen. So what I mean here is that our thoughts in itself are something that needs to be explored. What belief system am I coming from that is making me feel anxious about this particular thing is a question that we need to be curious about, so that I can heal the wound as well.
So basically you're saying these are short-term solutions to a problem that is actually more deep.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say it's short-term, but they are more, you know, safety-based changes that you're making in your environment, so that because we have to get our brain back to connecting between amongst the parts, these are mandatory to do. These are necessary. They are not something that we can choose, but this is something that's necessary to do, so that you can go ahead and heal the wound as well. And because you will practice it more and more, it will become a part of your lifestyle to do so.
Okay. So these are all things that I can do by myself, but what if there are people who feel like they need help, they need professional help, or they need to reach out to someone? And in that case, who should they reach out to? Is medication something that they should consider for their anxiety?
Whenever, let's say, you are identifying with the symptoms that we just mentioned, if you are identifying with the worry pattern, if you are identifying with some, where are you on the ladder, then the best is to reach out to a therapist. A therapist is not someone who is going to diagnose you, but is going to help you with this, right? So before getting into the diagnosis, before getting into understanding if it's a disorder or not, it makes sense to go to a therapist who will hear you out, who will understand everything holistically of what's been happening, right? And maybe the therapist can guide you if there is a requirement of a medication, or if there's a requirement of going to a clinical psychologist to get testing.
Just before we end this conversation, I want to know, is anxiety something that'll be a constant companion for most of us in our lives, or is it something that we can permanently get rid of?
How I would answer this is that, yes, anxiety is something that can be reduced to fear. Just fearing something. Imagine if you didn't fear something, then you would be in such danger, right? The fact that you fear, is that's why you're safe, And that's why we are able to survive in the world right now. But anxiety is an exaggerated response because the anticipation goes overboard, right? So the goal is to get the anxiety back to the basic emotion of fear. To fear the tiger, to, you know, engage your body whenever the tiger comes in front of us, but not anticipate that what if the tiger comes, because it's not helping in the moment, right? So definitely you can overcome anxiety. It is work, because what we are doing here is we are rewiring the brain. So it takes a lot of consistency and work. But if you have professional support, let's say of a therapist and a psychologist, and of course in cases medication required, the journey becomes at ease. And it can make you feel more empowering every day.
Thank you so much for this wonderful conversation, Susha. I think I and a lot of people who are hearing you right now have benefited immensely from it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Prachi, for having me.